welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Well, welcome back to the podcast and a fresh new week. This week, I would like to continue our discussion about building resilient cities. Last week, we spoke to Jenny Rowe, an environmental psychologist who spoke about green spaces and blue spaces and all the other important elements to build urban environments that cater to well-being and mental health. Well, in today's episode, I have the big pleasure of speaking with Tor Krog. Now, he's the Nordic head of e-mobility at Siemens Smart Infrastructure. Today, we will be exploring the future of transportation in cities and how electrification plays a crucial role in building resilient and sustainable urban environments. Now, as cities continue to grow and expand, it's becoming increasingly important to find sustainable solutions that can accommodate the transportation needs of residents while minimizing the impact on the environment. This is where electrification comes in, and Siemens is at the forefront of this effort, developing innovative solutions to address the challenges that cities face. We will be discussing the important role that electrification plays in creating resilient cities and how Siemens is contributing to this effort through strategic marketing, technology commercialization, project management, and market development. We will also be examining the challenges that cities face in the process of electrification and how they can overcome them. One of the key components of electrification is the development of infrastructure for electric vehicles, such as charging stations. We will be discussing the importance of this infrastructure in creating a sustainable city and how Siemens is working to implement these solutions. We will also be exploring the benefits of electric buses and ferries in terms of reducing emissions and improving public transport, as well as how electrification will impact urban planning and design in the future. And lastly, we will be discussing how electrification impacts energy consumption and management in cities, and how it can be optimized for efficiency and sustainability. So join me now for this fascinating discussion with Tor Krog as we explore the future of transportation in cities and the role of electrification in building sustainable and resilient urban environments. So now let's slip into the stream and meet Tor Krog. Well, Tor, welcome to the show today. I appreciate your time. I was wondering, maybe we could begin, kick off the conversation by you telling us who you are and what you do.
Well, my name is Tor Krog, as you said, Jason. I'm 54. I live in Norway. I've been working in Siemens for around 12 years already. Mm. You know, time flies. Various position in sales, business development, strategy, energy management, smart infrastructure. And now I'm heading e-mobility in the Nordic region. Mm. It's a newly established business unit delivering charging infrastructure within the transportation sector. So that's me, more or less.
And for those of us who may not know what charging infrastructure is, I'm wondering if you could maybe open that up and elaborate a little what that technology is.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we have to, if we take the helicopter perspective, and there are some really big macro trends or big challenges that we need to resolve for cities, for infrastructure. And that would be, you know, climate change, obvious, and congestion. And to be able to deliver upon those challenges or to resolve those challenges, we need to have efficient and emission-free transportation. It's as easy as that. And we like to talk about electrification, right? Mm. And that means, in principle, we have to get rid of all the old engines, Jason, all, you know, combustion engines, and replace that with electrical engines that reduces emission. And of course, these electrical engines, they need energy. And as a core assumption there, they need renewable energy. And in order to facilitate for this, that's when we need the infrastructure for charging.
And I think this is a very, I think it's a very interesting, because this particular episode, as we've talked pre-episode, is that this is part of a series talking about building resilient infrastructure, resilient cities, and resilient urban development in general. And I think your take and your discipline and your focus for you, your team, your department, I think, again, from my perspective, it's going to contribute to that future that we need to move towards. And I think, as you said at the top of this interview, just before we started recording, that it's about taking an optimistic view of the future and what we can do now to create the trends. Because for me, it's about planting the seeds if we want to harvest in whatever it is, in this case, 6 or 60 years. How do you see the sort of future transportation of cities as we evolve from fuel-based vehicles to more electrical-based vehicles? I mean, what does that future look like?
Yeah, I wish I could. I wish I could tell you the exact future. But you know, if we look at the long-term future and resolving these issues for cities, emission-free transportation, reduce efficient transportation, because you know you want the citizens to have a sense of well-being, of safety, and you want also to have productivity and competitiveness. So I think we're exploring a whole bunch of new ways of transportation and reducing emissions. It could be like, you know, are you going to rent or own your vehicle? Is it going to be on demand or fixed? Is it going to be small vehicles or large? Is it going to be in the air, on land, on water? And each city has its own characteristics that you need to fix. And I think it's going to be really exciting to see how these different models and how the different technologies will evolve. But for the midterm or short term, it's really, like I said, to make sure we make that transformation of emission-based or fuel-based or conventional fuel-based engines to electrical as fast as possible. The good thing, I mean, we're engineers, we're in Siemens, we love that. So we're optimistic. And the good thing is a lot of the technologies we have already, now it's about putting them to deploy them as fast as possible.
You know, as one of the things, as you said, well, two of the major things that you mentioned at the top of the hour was sort of urban growth as populations move more into urban centers and obviously climate change. Now, we are both speaking from Oslo at the moment, and Oslo has, as you said, each city has its own particular nut to crack, a combination to crack in this sense. What do you feel some of the challenges are for cities to implement electrification? I mean, how can they overcome some of these challenges? Like, what are the major challenges that you see from your perspective that needs to be overcome?
There are quite a few. I said, you know, the technology is already there, that there's still quite a few challenges. We must understand that the entire energy system is going through a massive transition. So, you know, it used to be like, and it's all about the transportation of electrons from where we produce it to where we need it, when we need it, right? So that means that we have to make sure that transportation system of electrons is as efficient as possible. And we have all sorts of things disturbing that now, because people are starting to produce their own energy. We have much more renewable power that is unpredictable. We don't know where and when the sun is shining or when the wind is blowing, right? So we have all sort of complexity added to the energy system that we need to understand. It will be a challenge for cities. So that's one part of it, so the technical part. But of course, for cities, financial barriers, structural barriers, you know, legislation, incentives, working across the typical things, like, you know, working across organizational boundaries to resolve things, is really important to look at. And of course, we want this infrastructure to be built now before we get the electrical cars or, you know, electrical buses or electrical planes or whatever. And to make those investments early on is really a challenge. And maybe also on a personal level, you know, we have to let go of some privilege and change at a personal level as well. So it's not going to be easy, Jason.
And no, that's for sure. I mean, any of this is going to take investment. It's about embracing the struggle in order to create a better future as we see it from our perspective. So for me, I think what we're talking about is more urbanization. You know, when it comes to more sort of diesel or fuel-based trucks and such, when you're up in the mountains or deep in the countryside, well, then that's a different thing. But right now, just to scope this out, this is within developed urban centers with a public transportation system. Would that be okay just to, for now, to sort of corral this conversation?
Absolutely.
So Scandinavia is considered to be pretty much maybe a little ahead of the game than other cities and other countries per se. What are some of the things that you've seen Oslo implement that has been very effective to encourage the populace to move more towards electrification and getting used to that idea?
Well, I must say we're a bit privileged in Norway because we have a lot of renewable power already in the energy mix. We have the hydropower, right? For us to meet the decarbonization targets, if you look away from oil and gas, then the only way is to make sure that we use that renewable energy and transform that to electric engines and then reduce. So that's key. And then I think we become quite strong on setting targets, which is important. So really committing to targets and driving that. I think also for Norway in particular that we had, I mean, it was a bit easy for Norway in a way because, yes, we were visionary and we took away some tax on electric cars, right?
Yeah.
But that's because we had a lot of tax on cars. So it's easier to take away a little bit, you know, than for other countries that are not able to reduce any tax because they don't have it, right? So by doing that, you know, we started this change of making electric vehicles more and more attractive quite fast. And then once we reach this tipping point where suddenly energy storage or batteries are becoming more competitive, we have renewable energy at the competitive price, at least we used to have, right? And we have electric cars, and you have this symbiosis of innovation that suddenly happens, and then that will drive the change. And for Oslo, I think the ambitious targets has been key. The different players has been key, but I think still is a long way to go. We have, you know, cruise boats at bay that has massive emissions. If we could, I mean, a cruise boat is like a small city, right?
So
if we just put a plug into this cruise boat while they're at bay in Oslo, that would be a really interesting, create a really, you know, good impact. And I think, you know, the municipality has a key role to drive the change to enable the infrastructure. But I would also say that you have a lot of service providers working in this big innovation system with the new electric cars and the goal to reduce emissions that also contributes together with the city. I would say it's a whole bunch of different factors.
I think it's interesting because, as you said, you know, it may be a little easier for Norway, even though it is an oil-producing country. But when you look at the internal infrastructure of this country, we do are naturally blessed with sort of hydro. I mean, I don't know what it is, 90% or something like that is driven by hydropower. You said, you know, we are driven by goals to set the goals. And so, you know, actions and everything have to be aligned with those goals. My question is to kind of back engineer this a little. When we look at the objectives and the goals that are they set by, for example, the European Union and then Norway falls into place with that? Or has Norway developed its own specific objectives and goals for the country itself?
We have the Paris Agreement as sort of the foundation for change, for setting targets and committing to targets. And every year, you know, improve those or strengthen those targets. That's key and that's fundamental. And we're part of that. Then EU comes with some targets, yes, but also with some incentive schemes and some financing packages to make sure we try, you know, we can drive that change. And we're part of that. So that's key for the change. But we also see that, you know, cities have their own targets. And it's a bit of a competition between cities, you know, who can be emission free by but also because cities need to be competitive, right? They need to attract people. And part of that now was really to be a sustainable city. So they will have targets, and the municipalities will have their own targets. So they all develop their own plans and execute on those. So it's a combination, I think.
And I think some like in the States where you can see where, you know, at a sort of a national level, maybe the targets aren't as strong, but a lot of, as you said, cities or even states themselves are taking it on to their own and deciding what they want to do to create, especially California. I mean, California and San Francisco and a lot of these cities, they're doing their own efforts, irregardless of what the bigger goals are. They have to figure out their own goals and move forward. And hopefully that becomes a touch point that sort of spreads across, you know, the neighboring states and such. But as you said, Norway is a little different. Those goals are set from the top and then sort of the local municipalities kind of tie into that. Is that what I understand? So there is an alignment from the top and that kind of spreads down almost like a web per se?
Yes.
Yeah.
But please. I do see that, again, it's a bit of a competition it's a sound competition or it's a good competition.
It's a healthy competition.
It's a healthy competition, yeah.
There you go.
They want to work faster, do it faster. And this we need to accommodate to and motivate on, you know, and strengthen, I think. Mm. We're in a hurry.
Yeah, we're rushing for that bus. Let me ask you this. What specifically is Siemens doing, contributing to the effort of, you know, creating more resilient cities for the future? I mean, what are some of the specific initiatives that you feel you can speak to, that you're proud of?
Yeah, well, I can do that a lot, actually. But of course, and also maybe in general terms, I think what I find really interesting and motivating is to be when being part of a big company like this is that we are able to make an impact because we're a large company and people listen to us if we talk about the technology that's needed or the technology that can actually make a difference, right? So as long as we are tapped into these macro trends, these big global challenges and act on that, it gives us an opportunity to influence and actually make an impact. So it starts with that, I think. And I think, even though it's on, you know, every engineer working and having discussions with customers or we're working in certification or, you know, standardization committees or even executive level or, you know, with heads of states to really, you know, understand how technology can make a difference. So that's, I think, it's one key aspect of it. Then we worked a lot with planning for cities. We've had several initiatives where we have used, you know, digital simulation tools to understand how and model how key available technologies can be deployed and meet the city's performance indicator. So you can say that it could be like both, you know, it has to be a manageable cost, but we also want to create jobs. We need to reduce CO2, or we would like to reduce particle matter emissions, for instance, and to understand how available technologies can be deployed, what are the alternatives for cities, is one way to approach it, like a consultant in a way.
Yes.
We've done similar things for e-mobility, meaning that you do some sort of stress test for the grid to really understand how future scenarios can be realized upon where you need electricity, at what point in time, and so forth. So again, doing simulations, using digitalization to plan, I think is key. And another aspect, you know, where we work is around energy efficiency, because not just, you know, bring renewable energy and electrons to the people is key, but also make sure we don't use it excessively, right? So free up available energy to alternative use. So energy efficiency is a key area for us. And, you know, many examples of what we do. Another example would be how to make the grid more efficient, because it's all about the flow of electrons from where you produce it to where you use it. And you can think about that as a big highway. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that, you know, you get the flow of electrons through the wires without the traffic jams. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, using the technology for the grid companies. But I one really cool example from Norway that we worked on recently was a fish farm. You know, fish farming is really big in Norway. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have the fish stored in big tanks at sea, or even more so, we look at how we can put those storage tanks on shore. And why would you do that? Well, it's to make sure they're contained and they don't escape and they don't get diseases and all this. But if you put the fish farm storage tanks on land, you first of all you need to make sure that you have absolute renewable energy, because it wants to be sustainable fishing, right? And at the same time, you really need resilient energy systems, because you can't afford for the energy to cut the energy at any point in time. Mm. And we see more and more examples of this where we do that. And I think that's really a cool way of how we make, you know, renewable energy available, resilient energy available, and also enable competitive business development for Norway.
As you said, it's about maximizing electron flow from one point to another point without a lot of barriers and hindering. For me, in a very simple analogy, would almost be an irrigation of a field, a farmer's field. In order for the crops to grow, you need to make sure you have the right elevation, a constant flow of water at specific times, what have you. And I think that's, for me, that's, you know, it's almost an irrigation per se of the electrons to flow to where you need it. And I find there's so many aspects here to it that I find fascinating. As you said, it's about energy flow. It's about optimization. It's about, but if we could just rewind back for a second, you were saying you look at a city and you map out the city and you play out contingencies or possible scenarios and how that would affect the energy and grid and such. In the last, since the time of recording, what has kind of exploded, at least on the public realm, is artificial intelligence. I'm wondering, you know, the complexities of some cities is astounding, or at least from my perspective, it would be astounding to understand all the different variables that you have to calculate and that are in play. So what aspect does artificial intelligence play into the designing of these, what you do, or is it something that's coming?
I think we've only seen the beginning of this, because still I think it's like only, you know, if we look at all the potential things, assets, whatever you want to call it, that we can connect, because artificial intelligence or machine learning is all about using massive amount of data to optimize or to learn or to make more better or more informed decisions, right? And still, it's only like 85% of all assets remains unconnected globally. Mm. Of course, it's probably a bit more advanced in some countries than others, but this is key, like you say. And in order to optimize the flow of electrons, the irrigation, to understand where we need it, when we need it, of course, you know, it's has a lot to do with using data to optimize both at the planning level, but also at the operational level, to predict, you know, understand user behavior and all these things. So it's going to be a massive new industry and a key enabler to electrification. Absolutely.
Yeah, especially when you bring in the human behavior, talk about it, which way that will go. I mean, in some cases, there's going to be specific tangibles that you can predict with human behavior. But other than that, I think artificial intelligence could actually serve a huge aspect in that. And as you said, we're only at the trailhead of this technology and how it's implemented. But this is something that you're seeing Siemens bringing in more and more into play in a lot of this planning?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, for city officials or you know, industries in or business in cities or anybody who wants to make plans where technology is a bit uncertain, it has a lot of consequence what you do, you know, impact on changes on in the physical infrastructure. You want to make informed decisions. And today we have great tools for how to simulate different scenarios to understand how a specific technology will have a specific impact in terms of how it on the operational level, on the financial level. And this will, I think we have to be much better at using these kind of tools to make more informed decisions and you know, feel that we're more confident in the decisions. But at the same time, of course, you know, it's not easy to be, you know, the head of infrastructure in a city, whether it's the harbor or, you know, the transport bus operator or whatever, because you have to take some bold moves as well. And you have to make the decision rather than just to wait, right? But I think digitalization is absolutely key.
You know, there are a lot of political upheavals. Just when you look at sort of a lot of European cities that are based on a medieval infrastructure and then trying to develop that. And so, yeah, there is a lot of complications. You know, if I was to play as devil's advocate here, you know, when you sometimes see the news from California, you can see lines and lines of Teslas. You know, Teslas seem to be the favorite car in California, just waiting for a charging point. In Oslo, I haven't seen those kind of headaches. I'm sure they happen on certain peak times, but I haven't seen that happen. But if we take the devil's advocate here and say, well, what about the battery technology? You know, it only goes 500 kilometers and that's maximum, or charging times. It takes so long to charge. I mean, can we speak to some of that from, you know, a layman's perspective like myself? I'm thinking, oh, battery times, they don't go too far and charging times take so long. Could you speak a little to that? Because I guess this goes to the electric ferries, electric buses, and everything else.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. This is a massive change. And some industrial applications, it's a bit easier because you can change the behavior or the working processes and adapt that to this new technology. Like an electric ferry, you know, coming in, charging when it's at bay. This is technology fixing that. And you just hope that, you know, the local washing machine is not being cut off because the ferry is charged, right? But, you know, we have to overcome these kind of things. So that's easier. When it comes to behavior at the individual level, it's a bit harder. And we have this paradigm that we work in with fueling cars or whatever. We're building the trust to the technology. But from what I see, at least, you know, in Central Europe, or where it's quite easy to get around from city to city or where you want to go, that kind of mobility pattern is easily solvable with the batteries that we have today. So I think that's, you know, what I said, we've reached a tipping point now where the range is so good that it's no excuse in a way. Of course, if you look at, let's say, long-haul transportation, big trucks, it's another story. But they're also the manufacturers, you know, like the Volvos, like the Scanias, they have the technology today. So now it's about building the infrastructure as fast as we can to make sure that, you know, they can get their goods from A to B in an efficient manner.
If we talk about the future and from your perspective, I mean, how do you see battery technology taking off. I mean, right now, I think it's 500 to 600 kilometers or something to that extent. Forgive my layman's perspective here. But what is the goal? I mean, is there a specific goal on the horizon that technology companies such as yours or those who are developing batteries are trying to hit sort of short-term wise?
It's a really good question because it's all about optimization, right? You don't want to have a massive heavy car that will take you from the south of Norway to the north of Norway without charging, right? So it's an optimization job. And I think we've reached that point now where probably the size of the cars and the, at least personal, you know, private cars is about the right size. And then, of course, battery technology will continuously evolve and get lighter and more efficient. So that will, you know, put the weight down and the range a bit up. But I think that's solved now. So now it's on track in a way.
Yes.
Then of course, who knows? First of all, we have to make sure that we reuse the batteries, the battery cells. Then we have to look at, you know, other charging infrastructure technologies, like, you know, inductive charging, meaning that you don't put in a charging cable, but you just place your car above a big magnetic field that, you know, will basically fry you. No, but, you know, you have different charging technologies and maybe new fuels like hydrogen or similar. So we don't know that. But I think the point is we can't wait for other technologies now. We just have to keep on going. And it seems to be that battery electric vehicles or trucks is the right way at the minute.
As Tor Krog mentioned, electrification of modern cities is a trend that is only going to grow. You know, Norway has been at the forefront of the global effort to electrify transportation, particularly in the public transport sector. Now, the country has set ambitious targets to phase out fossil fuel vehicles by 2025 and is investing heavily in charging infrastructure and incentives to support this transition to electric vehicles. As a result of these efforts, Norway now has one of the highest rates of EV adoption in the world, electric vehicles. With EVs accounting for more than half of all new car sales just in 2020, in the public transport sector, more than 90% of new buses sold in Norway are electric, and the country has set target to electrify all urban buses by 2025. Now, the electrification of public transport is important to Norway for several reasons. First, it helps reduce greenhouse gas emissions and improve air quality in cities, which is particularly important in Norway's densely populated urban areas. Secondly, it supports the country's efforts to become a leader in sustainable technology and innovation. And finally, well, it's to help to reduce Norway's dependence on fossil fuels, which is an important goal for the country's economy and energy security. Well, with that said, there are also some challenges and barriers to the electrification of public transport. One of the biggest challenges is the cost of EVs and charging infrastructure, which can be significant upfront investment for cities and public transport operators. There's also the challenges around the availability of charging infrastructure, particularly in areas with limited grid capacity where the electricity supply is not reliable. Additionally, there may be issues around the maintenance and servicing of EVs, particularly in areas with harsh weather conditions where there's limited expertise in EV technology. Overall, though, while there are challenges to electrification of public transport, Norway has shown that it is possible to achieve high rates of adoption with the right policies and incentives in place. As other countries seek to follow Norway's lead, it will be important to address these challenges and develop strategies that support the widespread adoption of EVs in the public transport sector. Well, I'll let Tor Krog speak more to that. So now let's slip back into the stream. And sort of charging times, I mean, that's another question that comes up. Do you find that the charging times are like just are shrinking and shrinking due to new technologies or new types of what have you?
Yeah, it will. But of course, also here we have to think about the three aspects. I mean, we think about charging as we have this paradigm that it should be similar to a gas, right? Mm-hmm. So you just, you know, put in the hose and you it fills up the tank. It's a bit different for a battery, because you have to basically move the electrons from the grid to the battery, and it has to find its little place in the battery, and that takes a little bit of time. And
yes.
And the more populated the battery is with new fresh electrons, the harder it is for the electrons to find its place. So that's why it's charging slower and slower at the end of the, you know, where you're getting closer to the maximum. It has to do with how much energy you have available in the grid at the time, how the temperature. So it's a whole lot of different variables that we have to accommodate to and get used to, I think, which makes it harder for the old, you know, customer experience if you look at, you know, electric cars.
As you said, it's a paradigm. It's a new way of thinking. It's a new sort of mindset. And so how should we look at this? I mean, the typical consumer who does not have the in-depth knowledge or expertise such as you and your team and understanding all the complexities and variables, what is a simple way to picture this? Maybe I'm putting you on the spot here. But I think, as you said, part of accepting a new way of doing things in order to create sustainable, renewable urban centers and the whole infrastructure that is involved, it's going to require maybe a new way of, well, not maybe, it will require a new way of thinking. How can we conceptualize this so it's easier to try to move people more and more towards this?
Oh, yeah, that's a big question, Jason. But equally important. I think it's you know, even you know, I work in Siemens, a big engineering company. We're proud of being engineers, resolving big questions. At the same time, sometimes engineers, we have to think more about the user experience, meaning taking the perspective from the user side, whether it's a business that wants to change, needs to change, or a consumer. So it's all about finding solution that in a better way interacts with how you, the whole, you know, workflow you're in, or the task you need to do, or getting from A to B. At the same time, like we started off with, is around what will be the future scenarios here. Maybe we should, maybe, you know, not so many of us will have cars in the future. So the whole charging infrastructure will change for that reason. The concept, I think, really here is we need to make this transition happen. We all need to be part of it. At the same time, we need to do it in a combination of new technology, good business models and user experiences, and good legislation and incentives. So it's a combination of several things that has to come together to make this work.
It is a tough question I'm asking you to crack within the scope of an episode. But I think if we take this to a 50,000-foot level here, I think it's the idea of bringing people along. It's the user experience. Because at the end of the day, whether it's an electronic product we put in our home or what have you, it's how easy or something easy to adopt for people and a new mind frame for them to take on. Because, you know, when you think about it, those are the questions. Will we all have cars, or will it be the collective? Well, if it's collective, then you have to think about the availability and how easy it is. I mean, if you just look at a practical family, let's say a family of three kids, they may have a cottage. They may have to transport their kids to soccer, to hockey, to basketball, to handball, whatever it is. And all the logistics and the everything around that, the timing. I think, as you said, these are the kind of things we have to take on. What's the practicalities of the soccer mom or soccer dad when they're traveling, taking their kids, transporting kids, taking the dog to the vet, going out to the cottage, going skiing, whatever it is. I mean, it's exactly that. It's so, for me, it's very complicated because people don't always want to give up the intimacy that they have with their own private car, right?
This is the point. I mean, if we take away privilege, then that's a big barrier. But we also see an industry now really searching for what would be the best and optimal, again, if we talk about charging here.
Yes, yes.
Electrification, you know, emission-free transportation. Mm. We've only seen the beginning of new business models, new companies trying to figure out how they can both, you know, facilitate this change, but also make money in this. Mm-hmm. And that makes it a bit fascinating, I think, how we see the hunt for the optimal solution. And we just seen the beginning of this. I mean,
And it is, because you see alternative transport, such as, I've never seen so many electric bikes in my life. You know, I live up on what they call the King's Road that leads out of Oslo. And you should see, you know, you see a 75-year-old just, it looks so surreal. They're just climbing that steep hill, like not even breaking a sweat. But it is, as you said, it's about sustainable, non-polluting transportation. And it may not always show up as the vehicle. Or I'm starting to see a lot more electric scooters, which I love because they don't make all that. Electric scooters for me are like little dogs, little yapping dogs that never shut up. And these little scooters make so much noise, but the electric scooters, they're such a blessing, right?
But this is an important topic when we talk about, you know, new technologies for cities to become more sustainable, more productive, you know, all the things we need to do to develop cities. Mm. We have a tendency also to think about extremely advanced solutions. But sometimes, you know, bike sharing is an excellent, you know, example of how to resolve urban mobility in a way that is sustainable and simple. So, you know, it's a mixture. And it's sometimes, you know, we enjoy so much talking about all these, you know, digital, fully, you know, simulations and advanced solutions. But we have to have a balance of this and really value that it's a mix that will make it happen, right? So this is interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's also the electric scooters. I mean, then there's all the problem with electric scooters just being dumped everywhere. But slowly, as you said, we start somewhere, and then solutions kind of present themselves based on experience.
Yeah, it's all part of the development.
And Oslo, like, Oslo's a little behind, for example, Copenhagen, but they've got bike lanes everywhere now. And I see it, especially in the spring, in the summer, in the fall, and even some, you know, very passionate people are cycling in the snow and the ice. But you're starting to see more and more of this. And I think people actually find it quite liberating to jump on an electric bike with a dedicated lane, and you feel relatively safe. And that just encourages the practice. And I think it comes back to what we were talking about before, Tord, was the mindset. It's the new paradigm of thinking, as you said. And it doesn't always have to be a vehicle. It could, well, a vehicle in the sense of four doors and a hatchback kind of thing.
Exactly. Again, the tipping point now is around available technology, but also regulation and legislation and targets. And also, I think the mindset of more and more people that feel and believe that we need to make a transition now. Of course, a bit easier to say, maybe in some parts of the world where we have basic infrastructure already. Yes. It could be other places, you know, where there are more, you know, pressing topics that we need to resolve before we can start talking about electrification. And it's a global effort, this. It's not just that, you know, we fixed it here in Norway and it works. But I think it's important, and also part of the what we have the opportunity now to do is because becoming more and more mature with mobility or urban mobility, electrification in the Nordics, we should use that knowledge and export that knowledge. So it shouldn't only be that we try to fix things, but it could be also be an important part of business development and building knowledge.
I think that's so salient point. It's so well articulated, because I mean, there doesn't have to be just one way of doing this. And as reality shows, there are multiple ways of trying to figure out this, to crack the code of this. And I think across cities, across the world, with different mindsets, different ways of looking at it, different approaches, as you said, it's just not a Nordic thing or the States thing or in Japan or what have you, is that over time, ideas based on experience spring to life, and they percolate to the forefronts of the mind. And that's where sharing happens and new innovative ideas, things. Because I think at the end of the day, a lot of this has to do with creativity. It's about bending ideas, breaking ideas, and blending ideas that we come up with new innovative solutions that could be just as a very simple thing or a groundbreaking technology. And again, I speak from a very layman's perspective, but I think creativity and innovative thinking is so key to creating these sustainable and resilient cities or the infrastructure.
Absolutely.
That's just my two cents worth. But I'd like just to shift back. You were talking about transport. You know, we have these highways, these communication lines between urban centers. And a lot of the pollution comes from the transport of whatever, vegetables and produce and clothing and what have you, just wears from one center to another. How do you see how is it currently with sort of the transport technologies if we connect it to urban sustainability and resilience?
Again, a rather big question, transportation, urban mobility. Well, first of all, we use the term whatever we can electrify will be electrified. Mm. So that means, provided, of course, that you have renewable energy to fuel it, right? That's important.
Yes.
Green electrons. Some part of infrastructure is ready for that, like trains, trams. And they will just continue. You have some parts of trains or railways that, you know, still will need some infrastructure to get there, or you might have a hybrid solution where you have hydrogen to take away the old engines. So that's doable. When it comes to cars, we're there. When it comes to long haul transportation, we're getting there, but a lot to do still with respect for infrastructure. And even planes. I mean, we talk now about electric planes. I mean, short range planes, like, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, whatever, small, you know, 15, 20 seats or whatever, within, you know, 5-10 years, maybe. So even the aviation industry have to, you know, totally rethink their technology and how they transport people from A to B. Of course, the aspects of maybe new technology like drones, but we haven't really seen just the starting point of. So,
can you speak to that?
To change, yeah.
Like, can you speak to that with the drones? How do you see that contributing to this overall conversation?
Well, it's a bit chaotic, I think. In my head, at least, to see all people, you know, or goods floating around in drones all the time. I just can't see that picture happening without clear regulation and really...
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
...drone technology. But it's happening. So, and this is smaller scales, but they also need green electrons, right? So that will also, you know, drive the need for resilient and flexible infrastructure to fuel all these different technology, these different transportation media, whatever you want to call it.
I think it's so important when, as we move, you know.
Not to mention boats. I mean, we didn't even talk about that. But of course, there we see the opportunity maybe to use other kinds of, you know, synthetic renewable fuels or whatever. Also part of the equation, right?
Well, it's, you have these electric ferries within that hop between the islands and certain municipalities within Oslo. Is that what I understand you were talking about earlier? So you're starting to see electrification of public transport, at least when it comes to ferries between different stops. Is that what you're speaking to also?
Well, absolutely. At least for, you know, short, medium range ferries, we have the, you know, the electric propulsion engines. So it's basically a no-brainer. It's at least depending on the cost of energy, of course, but it's, to my knowledge, it's still cheaper and more environmentally friendly. So that's a no-brainer. And I think that started really when we could present this business case for, you know, most of the short-term or not short term, but short range ferries in Norway could be converted to electric propulsion and at the same time save money. So that sort of made the transformations for the government to say, hey, we need to make sure that that's a requirement, right? So yes. You use new technology, technology insight to get the right discussion at the political level, and by that to enable a change.
I'm just respectful of your time, Tord. What advice would you give to cities that are just sort of starting out on this trailhead of exploring electrification as a solution and for sort of transport challenges?
If we're talking about global cities that, you know, they all, like we said, have their different challenges, their different characteristics, different starting point. But to me, it's to look across all kinds of technologies and not just the, you know, tough and hard decisions and advanced solutions, but also simple ones, to have a balance of all. It's about starting to use data, collect data, and use data to help your decisions, to help your planning. It's also about breaking down barriers between organizations, between functions, between departments, to really, you know, have this co-creation, which is will be really important. And maybe we also need to get some new roles in the cities, like, you know, not just the architect, but the information architect or the digitalization architect. Yes. Or, you know, different competences that you need to make the decisions and to operate the city in a way. And of course, be bold, you know, make some decisions to get things going.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that also is constantly having an open to debate and panel where people can talk. But at some point, a decision has to be made, in that sometimes, like in any organization, sometimes after the discussion has been heard and the opinions have been weighed, that a decision has to be made in order to move things forward. Otherwise, it's just debate, talk. And sometimes at some point, talk has to move to actions. And when we're considering how fast urbanization is happening, and what I mean by that is populations moving in, you know, the severe climate changes we're starting to see, you can just see the weather changes. It's incredible.
And I think it's, again, you know, it's a bit dependent on where in the world you are, but I think, you know, the identity of the city and the people in the city, and when we do measures that resonates with our values and what we want to achieve, then that becomes a reinforcing power in a way. But to get to that stage is really hard, because you have so many conflicts of interest and so many. We see that even in Oslo, where we, you know, we want to remove traffic from the streets, which has a benefit for some, but it's a disadvantage from others. So, but if you all have this goal of where we need to go, then of course that is a really strong power. And this is your domain, Jason, when we talk about motivation, right?
But it does. It comes back down to sort of behavioral economics and choice architecture, that sometimes you need to be able to implement, you know, low level regulations that encourage behavioral change. For example, one of the things I've seen in Oslo is just due to parking. I mean, if you're running a car that's on gas or diesel, I mean, just to park your car anywhere in the center or any sort of sections close to the center, I mean, the prices are quite extraordinary. And that's just normal street parking. For electric vehicles, it's a lot cheaper, but still the prices are increasing. And this is, I think, part of that behavioral economics, helping people to make better choices through legislation. Again, it's not to go too far where it's draconian, where people feel like their arms are being twisted. I mean, that's going too far, and you're just going to get... the pendulum will just swing way to the other side. But I think it's low-level nudging and choice architecture to sway new behaviors. And I think that goes a long way, at least psychologically, to help people adopt a new mindset. Because at first, people thinking, what is this? But over time, they accept it as part of normal practice. It just becomes part of our habitual way of thinking. Exactly. And it's how each of us can contribute to this sustainability. It's not all down to the urban planners or engineers such as yourself. that each of us has to do, and we'll have to make these small choices, I think.
And I just come to mind that, you know, we have a great example in that, you know, even in your home country, Canada, I know people love driving trucks, as in the United States, you know, and now we've come to a point where even we have, you know, electric trucks, you know, the new Ford F-150 Lightning truck. And we deliver customized charging for those cars. I think that's really cool that we've gotten to that stage where you know, the the sort of core element of your culture, which is driving the truck, can also become electric. Maybe not just for the reason of not emitting CO2, but more it's maybe a financial thing. But still, it's part of a change, right?
Well, it's also kind of cool to drive an electric car if you haven't driven one for the first. You're waiting for the roar of the engine. Maybe that's when you engineers come in and you add some sound effects. Well, Tord Krog, thank you very much for your time. This has been a very enlightening conversation. I've learned a lot, and I think it's so important what you're addressing, and I think you actually have a very cool job.
I do.
Well, thank you for your time today. I appreciate you showing up and sharing your thoughts and your experience and how you see the future playing out.
I'm positive. You know, we're engineers. Our motto is transform the everyday, which I think with technology, you know, and I think that's really part of our DNA, to transform the everyday for a better tomorrow. You know, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it resonates with the people that we work with, either it's customers or employees or you know, people we want to work in our company. And we have this belief that, you know, technology will be part of the solution. It's not the only part, but it will be part of the solution. And that's who we are.
Yeah, I love that. Transforming the everyday for a better future. I think that's a great place to conclude our conversation, and hopefully we will be able to speak again in a year or so to see how things have developed from there.
Let's do so, Jason.
Thanks again, Tord.
Thank you.
Well, folks, that was the fascinating Tord Didrik Krog, who is the Nordic head of e-mobility at Siemens Smart Infrastructure. Personal thanks and a shout out to you, Tord, for taking the time out of your busy, busy schedule to have a conversation with me today about building resilient cities, and specifically about the electrification of urban environments. And to you, dear listener, I hope that, you know, you've gained some valuable insights into the role of electrification in building sustainable and resilient cities. As we've learned, the challenges of urbanization and transportation can be addressed through innovative solutions such as electric buses, ferries, and charging infrastructure, all of which are crucial components of a sustainable urban environment. Well, if any of this conversation has piqued your interest, I encourage you to reach out to Tord. You know, address your questions, address your comments towards him. You will find all of his contact information in the show notes. I'm looking forward to bringing you more episodes that continue this series on building resilient urban environments and infrastructure. And if you know someone in your network who can contribute to this conversation and you think would make a great fit for this podcast, please send me their name and contact information. And I hope to have them on as a future guest. Well, here we are again at the tail end of another episode. If I could ask you, if you could please subscribe, rate, and review this episode, as well as the podcast, you'd be doing me a big favor. And if you could also take a couple of minutes of your day to recommend this podcast to a friend, to a colleague, to a family member, you'd also be doing me a big favor. Well, folks, if you wish to subscribe to the newsletter, you will find the contact information in the show notes. Well, anyways, I wish you a great week, and I will see you next Monday. Until then, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.